On this episode of Damsels in the DMs.
I think that rebrands are often panic driven and unnecessary, because I think that they sort of overestimate how much the world is paying attention to, like, you know, what you can't rebrand from yourself. It's not, unless you just start lying. Like, it's impossible. It's like, your brand DNA is going to be in everything that you do. I mean, this is all, like, you know, my brand DNA is going to be in everything that I do.
This message is intended as a reminder that we are not licensed professionals, not psychiatrists or psychologists. If you have a serious problem, please seek professional help. The National Suicide Hotline is 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255.
There's some damsels in the DM.
Yes, queen.
Tell us what's the vibe. There's some damsels in the DM.
Who are you?
Please tell us what's the vibe. DMs, DMs. Yeah, we see them. Yeah, we read them. DMs, DMs. We don't need them. We just leave them.
Please.
Yeah.
It's going down in the DMs. Bye.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Damsels in the DMs. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Alejandro.
How have you been doing, Alejandro? Anything new with you?
Lots. I feel like September really flew by. By the time this episode comes out, it'll be October. But by the time we get to October, I'm sure we're going to be saying the same thing, that it just feels like time is moving so quickly. How is everything going?
Yeah, that was interesting. One of the things that Pickle brought up on this episode was time is a gift, not a threat. And that one, like, really hit me hard, because I feel like that's something that I personally struggle with a lot. Like, there's just not enough time in the day, not enough time to get everything done that I want. But it's so powerful, I think, to reframe the thinking on that.
It's amazing to be able to take ownership and not just let things happen. We can grab life by the horns and make intentional moves and... Yeah. You know, I feel like it was funny that we, I think, had an understanding or had this idea in our heads about rebranding or how one goes about rebranding. But what Pickle shared as far as, like, not making it so much a 180, but just letting yourself dive into authenticity and purpose in a meaningful way. It was like, it was a nice refresh button on that topic.
Well, and it's so true, because people naturally grow and evolve, right? Like, you have to expect that from people. So I guess, like, by putting the title of rebrand on it, it does have this air of inauthenticity, and also just, like, that you're doing it for other people rather than just showing the truest version of yourself. So I think that was another really powerful reframe on that, because, you know, if you just naturally evolve and you don't call it out, then nobody asks questions and they're just with you growing.
Oh my goodness, I'm so excited. When I met Pickle, it was back in the summer at a Nosotros networking event when I was actually doing step and repeat interviews on behalf of the podcast.
Oh, wow.
With Nosotros. And yeah, Pickle was one of the guests, one of the headlining drag queens at that particular day. And we got a chance to connect. And I'm so happy for Pickle to come on and share stories of experience, of life, lessons, wisdom. What a treat. Oh my goodness.
Yes.
And I love the iteration of, I forget how many C words there were now at this point. What, consistency.
So, we added that one.
But so many useful, practical tips, and in such an approachable way. Like, it just, I'm excited for listeners to dig into it. So let's do this, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right, we have Pickle, the amazing, the fabulous, the sparkling, glittering drag queen. Hello, Pickle, how are you?
Hello, I'm good, how are you?
Fantastic, thank you so much for coming on. I'm so happy to have you.
Yes.
I'm so happy to be here.
Yes, we actually met, Lauren, I think I shared with you this already, but we met at a Nosotros event when they were doing their... Yeah, the Pride event back in, I believe it was July.
Yeah, it would have been July. June, July, yeah. It doesn't matter. The summer.
All that matters is that you met and you're here now.
That's it. Yeah. So, Pickle, share with our listeners, you know, a little bit about you so we can get more comfortable and familiar. You know, where you're from, what do you do now, where you are currently living?
Well, my name is Pickle. I'm from Los Angeles originally, and I am the drag laureate of West Hollywood. I'm a drag queen here. I run an organization called Drag Story Hour here in Los Angeles, the Los Angeles branch, and I basically perform and host around town and participate in different educational programs like Story Hour with different organizations. So that's kind of my shtick. I like to say that like the three things you need to know about Pickle are comedy, community, and kids.
Oh, that's
the beautiful. Three C's, except one is with a K.
Except for one, right.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you first got into drag?
Yeah, I dabbled in drag in high school. I did a couple musicals that called for drag, and I did have kind of like an aha moment with it where it was like, oh wow, I really enjoy this, I really like dressing up. And then in college I had a boyfriend who introduced me to drag as like a broader art form, and I really fell in love with it, and I just kept doing it, and it really felt like the right thing for me, you know, the right, it checked all of my boxes as an artist, really.
I'm also curious about the third C that's actually a K. Where does the kids part come into this?
Well, I run the LA branch of an organization called Drag Story Hour, where we read to kids. And I got involved with that organization sort of by coincidence, because they were starting it here in LA, and I was just like the only drag queen that this person knew, Michael. So I was the first reader here in LA, and I just fell in love with it. I love working with kids. I've always enjoyed being around kids and teaching. And so it was just kind of a natural fit, and they're the best. So I do a lot of programming for children specifically, and they're just great audience members, and it's important work. So I'm happy to do it.
I see on Instagram, you know, you're not only reading to the kids, you're reading to the adults, the seniors in church. I mean, you are all over the place. And I love that you're doing this important work in the midst of censorship issues that we are facing across in schools across the country. And even, you know, prohibitive legislation that affects many communities, and particularly the LGBTQ+ community. So, I mean, touche to you, but I'm curious, when did that transition take place? When you were like maybe perhaps on stage performing one particular way, and then you decided to rebrand and refocus, or kind of center your niche on books and reading?
I would say it wasn't so much as a rebrand as like a natural progression. I've always been comedy oriented, and I've always been a little bit wholesome. So I think that it was just sort of like my performances have never been particularly raunchy. Like even when I perform for adults, it's pretty PG. And so it kind of was like a natural transition for me. And it gave me a little bit, I would say that because at the beginning of drag, I was kind of experimenting with different stuff, and I mean, I started doing Drag Story Hour when it was still like, I mean, it's still niche obviously, but like, you know, no one was doing it, so it was sort of, or like we were the third city that started doing it, it was pretty like uncommon. So, you know, I had been experimenting with drag in different ways and sort of different styles of performing, and I just kind of naturally through practicing it landed on sort of this more, it's not like, oh, I only do kids stuff or I only perform for kids so much as it's like, I have guiding principles to how I perform and what I do and what I focus on. And that usually has something to do with like, you know, education or music, or because I do like a show that's not specifically for kids, that's like with my band and I sing and stuff, but it's still in the same vein of like the spirit of, you know, frivolity and curiosity and like humor that is still in that same attitude, if that makes sense.
Oh, we love all the frivolity and curiosity. Yes, we're here for it.
I also love that you call out being wholesome, because I also think of myself as being very wholesome, and the films that I make are sometimes very wholesome. And I often feel like not embarrassed about that, but like, oh, I'm not as creative as other people because I don't take risks. Like, I just want to make, for me specifically, I feel like I make content for the girls. That's what I tell my producing program. And sometimes, you know, I feel like, oh, I don't take risks enough. I'm not dangerous. But like, I appreciate somebody who's just honest about like, yeah, I'm making content that's wholesome and I'm proud of it. So I think that's such an amazing way to own it.
Yeah, well, I think that, I mean, yeah, absolutely. And I do think that it's like the riskiest thing that a drag performer can do right now is perform for kids, interestingly. And it's like, you know, I say it a lot, where it's like, there's nothing more punk than being true to yourself. Yeah. And, you know, punk isn't about a particular hairstyle or, you know, bleeding out of your mouth. It's like punk is adhering to your principles regardless of social pressure. So in some ways it's like, by being wholesome and just sort of leaning into what I like to do and continuing to do it in spite of, you know, death threats, it's like, it is sort of risky and weird, but I really just am doing what I like, and it just so happens to be this thing that like people would have be so controversial. But yeah, I kind of let go of that. I was like, you know, whatever, I'm never gonna be like a cool kid or like something. Like, I've just kind of let go of that and been like, you know, I'm always gonna be talking down to myself. So I'm just like kind of letting go of this idea of like what I need to be or being edgy. It's like, you know.
Embrace the wholesomeness, yes. Embrace it. I love it. I love that we are. That's amazing. Wait, so aside from like death threats, which are, I'm sure, significant.
I don't get a lot of death threats. I mean, I like, you know, like they kind of come to me through other people. So it's like, it's not, usually I have like a layer of organizational protection. So it's not like I'm getting constant death threats, although they are definitely there. I just don't see them.
I was just curious though, what other challenges have you faced either creatively or professionally? And what were some ways that you were able to like either overcome them or persevere?
I think creative challenges, often it's like logistics, like money. Like, I think that it's like, I think more often than not, we're so affected by money, but not, we're too embarrassed to say that that's what's bothering us. So like, we come up with like all these other things like, oh, I'm stumped or I feel in the slump. It's like, no, I'm just poor. Like, you know, it's like, and it's depressing. I mean, I'm not super poor, but you know, I think that that's my biggest creative challenge is like resources. I have a big imagination and I can easily just pour all my resources into my art. And that can become a big challenge for me. I mean, you know, also patience is a huge challenge. I mean, it's a challenge that I overcome though. Like, I sew my costumes and I'm not an expert seamstress, but, and I have to make things like six times. Like right now I'm hiding it well, but my apartment is like, my friend came over and was like, I'm frightened because it looks like Buffalo Bill's house in here. And it's just like stuff everywhere because I'm making these costumes for this film I'm in. And I feel a little overwhelmed, but it's like, you know, I'll just make it six times until it's presentable. So those are definitely a couple challenges.
Can you tell us about this WeHo Drag Laureate? Because I feel like some of our listeners might be listening to this and being like, what is that? What does that mean? And how did that happen?
Yeah, totally. So a laureate is like, it's basically, an ambassadorship between a municipality or a government and an art form. So I essentially serve, like, the city of West Hollywood selected me through an application process. It was all public knowledge. If you want to, like, you know, go back and look at the minutes, you can watch them deliver it. They selected me to essentially serve as a representative of the art form for the city. So my primary responsibilities are, like, in a nebulous way, promoting the art of drag, expanding the footprint of drag, specifically in the city of West Hollywood, bringing, like, you know, innovative drag to that area. And more specifically, I do that work through appearances at events. So, like, the city utilizes me for different city events, and organizations can request my presence through the West Hollywood website. And then I also organize these drag artist roundtables where drag artists can come and we're having conversations about different programs that we're going to recommend to the city to implement. For example, we're working on suggesting a drag grant for the arts division that would specifically serve drag related projects and a community workshop space for drag artists who might not necessarily have access to tools like sewing machines or places to make their work and be creative. And so it's like, it's stuff like that where I function as sort of an ambassador and connect the public to this art form.
Just to ask, did you happen to have an event this past Saturday?
What was Saturday?
It was because a film that I was in had, like, a collaboration with West Hollywood. It was How to Hack Birth Control.
No, but it would have been the arts division if it was in collaboration with the city. So it's the same department. And it would have been through the commissioners, because the city has an artist's art commission.
I was just going to say, I would have been so mad if I had missed you there. So
no, I wasn't there. But it's great. Yeah.
In the midst of all of your humanitarianism, I cannot help but wonder, are there any idols that either, like, were in the beginning stages of Pickle brightening the stage, or are there new idols, perhaps, that are in your mind or that, like, kind of serve as something either to aspire to or just, like, momentum or, like, you know, motivation to keep going?
Oh, yeah. I don't have a lot of idols. I think that I have people that I admire, whose work I admire. I think it can be dangerous to kind of, like, idolize people. But I definitely look up to... But, I mean, you know, obviously, it's like I do have idols. Like, I looked up to Carrie Fisher. She was a big source of inspiration for me because of the way that she was so candid about her life. And not actually, I question how candid she actually was. But, like, I think what I was really inspired by her was her ability to take her life and turn it into comedy, which a lot of comedians do. But with Carrie Fisher, it was I just like the way she tells stories and stuff. So I really looked up to her. I really look up to, like business people. Like, Kara Swisher is a tech reporter that I really look up to. Scott Galloway is a random kind of, like, it treads the territory of being almost a little bro-y for me, but, like, he's a business person I look up to. And I take a lot of professional guidance from that world and those things that are happening. And so, but, like, you know, more fun idols, I feel like those are such boring idols. Like, no, they're not boring, but, like, RuPaul, I really look up to RuPaul. I think that in spite of, like, of course there's pushback on her success and everything, but God, no one does it like she does. It's just like, she is just so beautiful and so smart, and, like, she's just, like, she really is kind of untouchable. I mean, she's such a pioneer. I mean, she was doing drag when no one was... She was doing drag... This is a common thing where it's like, well, drag has been around forever, blah, 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 blah. She was truly the only one doing drag in the mainstream for a long time. Like, she was alone at the VMAs. She was alone at these red carpet events. Like, that must have been pretty lonely on some level to be like the only drag queen, you know? It's yeah. like pretty crazy. So her, yeah, definitely. I try to think, I really like Hillary Clinton.
I love Hillary Clinton. You're speaking my language.
Yeah. I think that she's probably like in some deep stuff and like probably there's a lot of like weird, weird money happening there, but I think she's cool. I like her.
Well, yeah. Also a pioneer.
Yeah, definitely.
But speaking of pioneers, Pickle, I feel like it's so powerful the way that you've chosen to structure your drag around reading to children, especially given everything that's been happening in Florida around books. And I just really admire that you use your art form around kids, because I remember my first time experiencing drag was such a powerful moment. And like you bringing that to kids, I feel like is incredibly inspirational. And I'm curious, like as we get into our little expert section, if I were somebody who, you know, had never been around drag before and I'm interested in getting into drag, what would be some steps that you would advise me to take?
Totally. I am also going to tack on to my answer, Gwen Verdon, who is a Broadway performer from like the mid-century. Anyway, sorry. I just yes, like that occurred Gwen, to me. Gwen. Okay, yeah. It's interesting because I can't, and my finger is getting all like over here.
Point, just start gesturing. Point at us all day.
sometimes I watch these things back and I'm like, why do I gesture like that? Anyway, so I will say that like, I really just genuinely enjoy reading the books for children. I really don't do it for any other reason other than I really enjoy it. And I tell people that when they're starting story hour or whatever, like, you know, if you want to do it, like, then do it. Like, I only bring people in that really want to do it. They really enjoy it and really get a lot out of the program. I think that, you know, children are so fun to perform for. Parents are so fun to perform for. And I do kind of recognize the importance of it, but that doesn't guide my decision making very often, other than like, if I'm nervous that like I'm gonna get killed, I'll be like, it's important. I'll like go out there anyway. But so I will say that caveat that it's like, you know, I selfishly really enjoy the program itself. And that's why I do it. But I think that but I do recognize that like, you know, a lot of these, it can be very emotional for young queer people and it can be really intense. And I feel bad because I can't get caught up in any of that. Like, because if I stop to sort of soak in all the emotions, it gets really intense because there's so much negativity that I try to be gracious and soak that all in. But I also just try to just do the program and not get caught up in it, because it's like, they'll see it and it'll affect the people it affects. It won't affect the people it's not going to affect, but yeah, being young and seeing like drag or even like fantasy was really special. So I think it's cool to be able to touch young people in that way. And also, I think my advice for people starting drag is always to just go for it and just, you know, enjoy it. And remember that drag is really irreverent and is all about your personality. I teach drag to the delight of the far right, and my sort of like tenets of it are that it's about you know you conceal a part of yourself to reveal a deeper truth about who you are, and as a result you connect with your audience. So I think that it's important never to lose sight of who you are when you're doing it.
I love that message. Oh my God. That's so beautiful and heartfelt. Ooh. But I'm curious though, if someone were really determined to, you know, book a gig, what are like either 3 to 5 like go-to you have to do this in order to, yeah, to book them gigs?
Oh yeah. You know, I'm not the most successful drag queen in the world, but I will say that I think that I have a pretty solid, have made a pretty good sort of living of it. And even though I'm terrible with money, but that's unrelated to my ability to like bring it in. I think that you have to remember what I do is that I remember like the market value of what I'm offering. Like my most, the thing that makes me valuable as a performer is my work with kids. I mean, and not to sound like cynical, and sometimes like when I open my friend says I have to be careful because I can get a little bit of like lizard brain but it's like what helps me professionally is I have a strong understanding of what value I bring to what places. I'm not going to make good money in nightclubs and bars because that's not the kind of work that I do, and that's not where I get like the most traction. Like I get the most traction with young people and with, you know, programs and libraries and bookstores. So I really leaned into that, and that's not a coincidence. You know, it's like you have to understand what it is that you bring to the table, not just as a creative person, but, you know, this is America. So it's a capitalist society. So everything, including creativity, is subject to the markets. So it's like, I think a lot of drag performers who are trying to get ahead professionally and get frustrated is because they're working in bars, which have really low profit margins. Mm-hmm. And the bars and clubs don't, it doesn't make sense for them to reinvest in creativity because they don't need creativity to make money. They need people in the bar. So it's like, as long as you're someone who brings in a lot of people, it doesn't, like, you know, creativity is like a bonus for them. So it's like, I prefer to work in venues where, you know, the market value is determined by the creative input. So like I partner with organizations who value my creativity and that's what they want. So that's definitely something that I think new drag artists need to remember is that like our work sounds so garbage, but it's like my work isn't intrinsically valuable monetarily. I'm not entitled to make a living off of my creativity. I'm entitled to my creativity, mm-hmm. and to the joy and the happiness that it brings me, which it does. But it's like, you know, if I wanted to be making a ton of money, I would be on social media tapping into, you know, algorithms and stuff like that. But it doesn't bring me joy. It doesn't interest me. But I have accepted that it's like, I'm not going to get a return on those platforms because I'm not, you know, capitalizing on them. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
it makes total sense. Yeah.
That's like very clear. You're doing it for the love of the game rather than any extrinsic motivation, which like makes me curious also, what are some of the things that you're teaching when you said that you're teaching drag?
It's mostly like I haven't done like a comprehensive class, even though I've built curriculum around it, like hypothetical curriculum based on like educational standards that would teach drag more thoroughly. But I focus on those three tenets that I touched on, the conceal, reveal, connect, because it's like, so for example, when I teach drag 101, which is what we kind of just call it, we did it with the Academy Museum. So we had four sort of segments over 2 hour period, which started with like basic drag history that the One Archive Foundation, or the One Foundation, but they just changed their name. I can't remember what it was, but they did like a little PowerPoint on sort of significant trailblazers in drag. Then we moved on to me, who kind of laid down the theory of drag. So like, what is it that makes drag drag? Which are, as I said, those three tenets where it's like, you know, we brainstorm and crowdsource, like, what are ways that drag performers conceal themselves? It's like, oh, there's makeup, costume, hair, changing your voice. It's like, these are the things that RuPaul and, you know, Landon Sider have in common. Like, you know, they're so different, but they're both doing this thing where they, you know, hide some part of themselves or transform themselves in order to sort of give you a peek into their innermost selves on some level, which creates that vulnerability. So I talk about that a lot. And then, you know, we did like a little bit of makeup. So it's like the important thing I think with that work is to keep it very open and keep it very flexible. So like I would introduce students to tools that they could use to realize their own creative vision, as opposed to being like, this is how you like make yourself a fabulous woman. Like, you know, that's a little limiting. So it's like, the idea would be, okay, you teach the fundamentals of the practice, just like painting, you know, you're not like, okay, we're going to paint Guernica. Like, you know, you teach them how to like do color theory, basically. So a lot of that work is around figuring out what the color theory of drag is, essentially. This sounds kind of boring, but it's important.
Fascinating. I love it. It's, did you ever read Frank DeCaro's book about drag? I saw him you may have crossed his path at Outfest. I saw him there this past summer.
Which one? What book?
As well.
Yeah, he was on our podcast as well. Frank DeCaro. Anyways, another author. My point to this question, though, is I'm curious, will there be a pickle drag manual in publication sometime, or some sort of...
Maybe. I'm not like, I kind of do it as like a hobby, like that part of it. And, okay, you know, I'd like to continue that work professionally. I could see there being sort of drag. That, I mean, that's one of the great things about arts education, is that there's just so many different ways to kind of document and codify it. So, I mean, I could see myself doing that. I definitely will hopefully write books at some point. Okay, codify. Not today.
We got another C to add to your list. That's it. Go ahead.
Yeah, codify. That's the last C. That's the last K sound, which coincidentally is the strongest comedic sound, is the hard K.
The hard K, yes. Mm-hmm. K. Yes. Comedian was talking about this.
Oh, it's in 30 Rock too. They have a thing about it where they're like, the hard K.
Can you say rural juror? Very fast.
Rural juror. The rural juror. Have you even watched the rural juror? We're on a 30 Rock tangent now.
Oh my God. Well,
Julia Louis-Dreyfus. That's another one.
Yes. Oh my God. Whoa. She's an angel.
That's another idol. Definitely. Please. Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Yeah.
Yes. Well, no, I was just going to ask. So, like, if you're advising somebody who's in drag and they want to go through a rebrand, what are some ways that people can do that? And how have you advised people in that in the past? Or have you ever wanted to go through a rebrand yourself?
I think that my advice would be don't. I think that rebrands are often panic driven and unnecessary, because I think that they sort of overestimate how much the world is paying attention to, like, you know, what you can't rebrand from yourself. It's not, unless you just start lying, like, it's impossible. It's like your brand DNA is going to be in everything that you do. I mean, this is all like, you know, my brand DNA is going to be in everything that I do. So it's like, I think that it can feel like, did you notice that, like, the 99 cent store did some weird rebrand? They did some rebrand where they, like, changed all their graphics and stuff like that. And it just feels like busy work to me. I think that growing is normal and natural, and that'll result in change. Like, you know, the drag that I do today is very different from the drag that I was even doing a year ago, but I think of it as a progression. I don't think of it as like a 180. I think it's all part of, you know, the natural growth. And I think that, you know, people that I think, you know, because I've had friends that have done like hard rebrands of, like, you know, it hasn't resulted in what they were looking for, which was like, oh, it's my name that's keeping me from becoming a superstar. That's what it is. It's like, no, it's just not like what's on the menu today. So I think that it's a little jarring. And it's a little, I'm not super pro rebrand. Maybe that's a little controversial, but that's just kind of my stance on it. I think that it communicates panic. I would say that if I were giving advice, which I don't give a lot of advice, but if my advice on it would be, or if I were feeling panicky and I were like, oh, I'm going to shift. I would like think like, oh, I'll take a class, or like, you know, I'll add this to what I do. And if I'm really passionate about it, then it will just eventually become what I do. But I don't think it's always a good idea to be like, okay, hard pivot. I'm going to start, you know, making wicker baskets now. Like, you know, it's like, okay, cool. But, and I just don't think that anyone notices. I think that, like, you know, yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. And I really appreciate the permanence, or not permanence, but like the dedication to authenticity. I feel like I'm hearing that as like a really strong undertone of like what you're communicating in terms of like, you don't have to do a whole 180. I love how you phrase that too. You don't have to do a 180. You just move as fluidly as possible in whatever direction that your gifts are taking you. And which I'm sure serves super well when you're reaching out or making a positive impact in communities that might be hit heavily by really discriminatory practices or legislation. And for, you know, for people who might be listening who want tips on how to make a positive impact in their own community that might be hit, or not hit, but like that might not be as open-minded as a place like Los Angeles, what sort of tips do you have for them? For them to just get started or to take a risk and put themselves out there?
I think that, yeah, it's tricky. I've never lived somewhere. I think that just continuing, perseverance, I mean, just like the loudest people are in the minority usually with the negative stuff. And I mean, luckily and kind of surprisingly, the judicial system seems to be kind of stripping down those. I mean, it'll be appealed, but the Texas court or the federal court just was like, okay, that law is unconstitutional, and that will have, it'll probably go to the Supreme Court, and I'm sure that they'll screw us over. But it's like, you know, I think just perseverance, and also being mindful that, like, if you are going to stay in a place where it's not necessarily supported or it's being actively legislated against, I think considering the fact that you might have to couple what you're doing with like political action as an inevitability to make it safer, it's like, you know, if you want to avoid that, then I would say, you know, relocate. But, you know, it's like there's so much. Local government is so important, and I try to make a point of going to a lot of local government things so that I can see how change is being affected on a local level. And what people don't realize is that, like, there's like some random person in your neighborhood who has like a disproportionate amount of political power because they're the only person showing up to the neighborhood council meetings. You know, there's like a lot of political power to be had. And sometimes I'll show up at these like little meetings and I'll be like, oh, it's you who's been running the show. Like, that's why, like, you know, our neighborhood is in disarray or whatever. It's like, you know, a lot of times it's like the way the political power is distributed in this country does kind of trickle down. And then you've just got some guy named Jim who's like making all these weird decisions. So it's like, go to your city council meetings, run for office, and get involved in that way. I think it's great. I mean, I'm pretty involved in the West Hollywood government, just not only for my laureateship, but just as a citizen, even though I don't technically live in West Hollywood. But, you know, I go to all those meetings, and I pay attention, and I speak up, and it's really empowering.
Oh my goodness. I love this civic responsibility, all these duties. Oh my goodness. You truly are a reigning queen.
Or I just really like power. Like, consider that. Like, who doesn't like power? That, bro. Like, civic responsibility. And power.
Mm-hmm. Was there ever a moment where you wanted to leave Trag? And how did you get through that?
Ooh. Yes. I had like I had my identity crisis rebrand a couple years ago, but what I didn't do is I didn't make it public in any way. So I just like was able to muscle through it. I'm very like private, but I auditioned for grad schools for like acting like a couple years ago. Cause I was like, I'm done. It was like the tail end of the pandemic and I was struggling to like find passion in drag, and I just wasn't working. I wasn't working. It was like, I felt like I had been so negatively impacted and like I had nothing to like move off of, and I was hating everything. And then So I started auditioning for grad schools, and it was great because it forced me to really throw myself into something completely different. I learned a lot. Also learned that I don't want to be an actor, which I had always kind of had one foot like out a little bit, being like, what if like I'm missing out on like acting? Like what if, like, cause I used to act all the time. I'm like, what if I'm just like this great actor who's like not in the right place? And like, I just didn't love it. I didn't love the work, even like in its best moments. I was like, I don't like this as much. I like acting. I think acting's great. I have a lot of respect for it. I like directing a lot more, but it was great to throw myself into that world, completely different world, and realize that it wasn't, first of all, I didn't get into schools. I did get called back. So I will caveat with like, it wasn't a complete failure, but I kind of felt a little bit flat on my face. I got rejected. It was a lot of rejection very fast and very intensely. And then I had this moment where I was like, wow, I kind of thought that I would get into grad school. I did not. Am I going to try it again? And I was like, well, I had this drag gig and I just fell back in love with it. I did a story hour at the aquarium. It was so what I love to do. I felt so at home and I felt so reinvigorated. It really reactivated me in drag. And I just was like, you know what? I'm just going to throw myself in and take that one foot that was always a little bit out the door and just slam it into this. And I fell more in love with it. And now I'm falling more in love with it every day. And I'm like, and in a way, I'm like, thank God and I know it sounds a little hypocritical because earlier I was like, don't rebrand, but I don't consider it a rebrand because I did not stop. And I didn't tell anyone. So I kind of privately investigated a rebrand, but it was so inspiring to come back to like what it was very like Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz and it felt great. And it also like, I was like, wow, like higher education has a lot of like really interesting, there's a lot of equity issues there, but not like for me, but for, there were so many interesting things that revealed themselves to me.
I mean, I think it's just such great honesty too, especially like with what you were saying earlier about the rebrand, because I do think it's important for us to like take time away from the thing that we love most to, you know, reinvigorate our passion for it. I feel that way even with the strikes right now, like, you know, the strikes were going on and then it sort of feels like this week with the writer's strike possibly ending that things have been coming back around again. And now like having auditions again, I feel like I've, you know, reinvigorated my love for acting, which I had lost in the couple weeks. So I think it's important to like take that moment for yourself and be like, is this the thing that I want to be doing? And am I sure of that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that you gotta really like doing it, you know, especially in the creative field, and especially in, I think that that's one of the, not to get too off topic, but like that's one of the big reckonings of the entertainment industry right now, is that it's like the reality is that it's not gonna be the golden goose for much longer. And it's like, it's gonna rattle a lot of people who are going to have to decide, you know, do I still want to do this? I mean, I like to remind everyone that like there was a time when theater was like where the money was. Yeah. So, you know, it's like things change. But yeah, I agree. I think it's really great to take a moment to be like, well, what am I doing? And just remember that it's like, it doesn't matter. Like, nothing, like, you know, there's no, one of my favorite sort of like quotes is like, time is a gift, not a threat. It's like, there's no race and there's no emergency. Like, there's no such thing as an emergency if people's lives aren't at stake. Like, there's just no other emergency. There's no emergency that can be communicated via email. There's no emergency that can be communicated in any other way other than like, oh my God, like, we need the fire department. You know, it's like, I just don't believe in fashion emergencies. I don't believe in drag emergencies. And that has given me a lot of like perspective.
That is a lot of, even as you're speaking that, I was like, oh, you're right. There are no emergencies. Just flow. Just let things happen. My goodness. Why stress? But I mean, It was funny. Inside, I was like, wait, but there can be printing emergencies. There can be some sort of customer emergency that has, but then I was like, no.
No, it's not real. It's like, I mean, which is to say, like, I love to work. I really like to work and prepare as much as possible. And then it's sort of like everything after that is like, okay, well, it didn't work out. Or like, whatever. Like, it's like, I wasn't prepared for that. So it's, but it's not. No one's gonna, everything's fine.
Everything's
fine. Curious, do you have like a morning routine or any healthy habits that you do every day to be the best version of yourself?
I would say that my most consistent practice is that I drink a lot of water. I drink, and for the last like 4 years, I've just been very consistent. I drink a gallon of water every day. I'm very consistent with it. It has alleviated many things, like over time, like being consistently hydrated. I really do attribute that to so much of like the good things in my life, where it's like my skin is clear, I have a clear head, I don't get headaches, I like, you know, I never feel like I'm making decisions impulsively because I'm like, you know, not hydrated. So that I will say I'm consistent with. I do go to the gym, I go to Training Mate, I love to be active. I wish that I ate a little bit healthier, but I try, I do. And I pray every morning when I wake up, for sure, every day on my knees, which I think creeps people out a little sometimes when I say it. But so I drink water, I thank God, and I do exercise consistently.
Consistency, we got another C. Oh wait, no, that's a C you already said earlier, I think.
I didn't say consistency.
You didn't say consistency? Okay, well, we'll add that to the list. That's we're 10 now, I think. Jeez.
Yeah. It's all about the C's.
What's a funny incident that happened during one of your reading albums?
Oh, well, children are just hysterical. I mean, they will just say things like I have this one section in a book where I'm like, can you show me, like, small? Can you show me medium? Can you show me large? Can you show me extra large? The little girl was like, just like you. And like, oh, so this girl was reading me. I'll just, like, look. I'll hear, like, rustling noises. And I'll, like, look down. And there'll just be a baby, like, in my purse. Just, like, robbing me, essentially.
Oh, my God.
Kids truly just are so unhinged in such a great way. They're just the anarchy of their brains is like so phenomenal.
That's hilarious. I love that. What was it? You're a giant or you're extra large? What was that?
Just like you, you're extra like, large.
Oh my goodness, that's hilarious. Well, our DM of the week asks, which venue do you have your eye on as a future performance space?
Is that a DM for me? I'm so curious. Did you crowdsource these DMs? No, see, no one's interested in my, like, my private life. No one cares. okay. I was hoping that there would be some thirsty DM, but no. Oh. Okay, performance venues? Yeah, I would love to perform at the Bourbon Room. That's a very attainable one that I have my eyes on a little bit. Pasadena Playhouse, I would love to collaborate with them. I'm a good friend of them, but I'd love to work with them, and I think I probably will at some point.
Yeah,
I don't like, I try to be very flexible, so I'm not like, oh, I gotta get in there. I usually like, I'm pretty determined, but in terms of venues, I'd love to perform at the Model Bain just because it's so close to my house. It'd be like a walk, I could walk there, which would be great. Yeah, I think those are.
These all sound attainable. Let's make it happen. 2024.
Yeah, I'm all like, Mickey's. just like random gay bars. Just like, I would love to headline at like, I remember when it was like, oh my gosh, if I could get on the stage of Precinct, that would be it. I would have made it.
And look how far you've come.
I know. How funny.
Amazing. Lori,
well, thank you so much for being here, Pickle. It was such a joy talking to you.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Oh,
thank you. Thank awesome. You. And please, for our listeners, tell us how we can stay updated on your work, any projects coming up, or social media that you want to share.
Well, you can follow me at Pickled Drag Queen on Instagram, and my website is pickleddragqueen.com. So pretty easy. And you can DM me or email me or comment and just like say something aggressive. Yeah,
personal questions you didn't get to ask, you can now.
Yeah, please. My DMs could not be more open. No one is like walking into them, but they are very open. I am like, what happened to me recently where I was like so flat? Oh, wait, no, that's a really dark story. I won't. But like,
okay,
I'll take any form of flattery from anyone. Let's just say that. Like, I was there was a protester at one of my events, and like, she was like, Pickle is like, you know, possessed. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know my name. Oh, like, you know, I like, we'll take that any form of validation.
Amazing. Pickled. Oh my God. Well, no more possessions, just glorious light surrounding your every future move. Thank you so, so much for coming on. This is amazing.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Well, that has been another episode of Damsels in the DMs.
What a treat! What a sparkling gift! Oh my goodness. And if you want more, please tell us who we can highlight, who you have your eye on, who you want to hear from, or whose book you're even reading. We want to know all about it. You can let us know in a DM, in a letter, in a voicemail. We have many different options for you to keep us updated on what you want to learn about, experience, or hear from.
Yes, absolutely. And please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Those really help us to continue to bring you content. So please make sure that you're doing that if you like what you're hearing.
And thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Damsels in the DMs.
Until next time.
It's going down in the DMs.
Bye.
'Em. Yeah, we see them. Yeah, we read them. DMs, DMs. We don't need them. We just leave them.
Please.
Yeah.
It's going down in the DMs. Bye.